that. I'm sorry.
No, you should keep that. So people just know that you love drinking.
Yeah,
drinking
no,
the alcohol.
That wasn't alcohol. That was a monster to keep me awake. Oh God! Oh, so, man. If you guys can't tell by the informal opening in this, this is a me. This is yep. not an episode that I would, or not a show that I think you would want to start out on, because this is a little bit more informal.
Yeah, it's a little bit more free flowing. Yeah. We interrupt each other, like I just did to you.
Exactly. Yeah. We talk about things we've been consuming that. We enjoy, but are not necessarily deep enough for a full 45-minute-ish episode.
Yeah, just things that we think are cool, or things that are happening in our lives and stuff like that.
Yeah, because I'm a hermit and I don't do anything, a lot of my stuff is just movies and books and video games. I mean, Stuart is an actual outgoing person, and so he has adventures and meets people and does things.
Hey, people still scare me sometimes.
Yeah.
Gosh. But yeah, you want to kick it off, or?
Sure. All right. So I...
What you got going on?
I got 3 movies and 2 books.
Oh, well, let's go one by one.
Okay.
Yeah, so all right. You can hit it off with one of...
Sure. So I will do... my wife sat down with me and kind of forced me to watch this documentary called Making Fun. Story of Funko. It's on Netflix.
Okay.
And initially, I was kind of reluctant... To watch a documentary about Funkos, because prior to this movie, I wasn't really... I was just like, I don't understand the appeal.
Yeah, because I... Not being... Okay, so being the weeb I am, I do have a couple of figurines of some anime people. You know, ladies and guys. They're... Like, the build of them compared to a Funko, I just don't like Funkos. I think that their proportions are all off.
I can definitely see the way that the pops look. I had no idea that Funko was started originally as a bobblehead company.
Makes sense. I mean, they've got giant heads.
Well, yeah, they do. But, like, the bobblehead figures are, like, the things that you would see on, like, a Kardashian.
Yeah.
Because, like, the guys who originally put the company together were super, like, into the, like, 1950s, like, car culture and you know, cool. like, the L.A. suburbs of the 1950s and stuff like that. And so they just kind of, like, hit it out of the ballpark with these things, so to speak.
Well, I mean, it's also interesting that they make them, like, collections. Like, you have to get, if you buy one Harry Potter thing, you actually have to get all the Harry Potter thing. So your collection can be complete.
There were a couple of collectors on this thing that I was just like, holy shit. Because I have everything that Funko put out. From whatever, it's been a while now, but like, whatever date that they started from their number one thing up through like 2013, and it's like...
Which is crazy, because they do very limited
runs. Oh, they put
out
like 1,500 things a year. Like, this person's basement was just floor-to-ceiling shelves, and I was talking with my wife, and... She's just like, those people have to have a database of something. Because how do you know when you're buying doubles of things at that point?
Yeah.
Like,
I mean, it just all becomes a blur of figurines.
Yeah. But I mean, I like the spirit behind it. Because the spirit behind the company is not unlike what I feel like we do with this podcast.
Yeah.
Or series of podcasts is that, you know, we talk about, like, positive things that are going on because the world is a dark place. And, you know, we just wanted to share a little bit of light, not to sound too hippy-dippy.
Yeah.
We just want to share some light with everyone.
And I wasn't, like, downing them about their quality. I think they've done a fantastic job. Their marketing is on point.
Yeah, you just don't like the aesthetics.
I just don't like the aesthetics. I'm probably never going to buy one myself, but I'm glad that they're doing well. I'm glad that they were kind of like a startup business.
Yeah, I've got one now.
Oh, which
my
one?
My wife has a lot of them, but none of them are really from collections or anything.
Yeah.
I just like the figure, and it's Battle Armor Skeletor from He-Man and the Masters of the Universe.
Skeletor!
They're doing a weird thing now where, I don't know if you saw the thing that I shared on Facebook. I may put it on the community page for this podcast,
yeah.
But it's a link from Bloody Disgusting, and it's Funko are putting out action figures styled like Masters of the Universe action figures from the 80s. You know, the gigantic,
Where their hands only move up and down.
But they're He-Man action figure types put out by Funko that are actually action figures of slashers from horror movies.
Oh. So you got your, like,
which is a
Freddy
weird mashup.
And your Jason.
Yeah, this is a weird mashup.
That is kind of a weird mashup.
But no, like, it's interesting to me that, like, basically a fan took over the company. Like, the guy who started it eventually sold it because he couldn't keep up with it. And
I mean, I'm sure he sold it for a nice chunk of change.
Oh, he probably did. They opened up a brick and mortar store
where you could just buy them off the shelf.
You can buy them off the shelf, which is preferable because I kind of, like my wife, like, want to inspect them. And I know a lot of people like take them out of the box. With the small space that we have, like, the boxes are way easier to store than just random figures.
Yeah.
You can make a tower out of them.
Yeah.
Both of us like to, like, inspect them because, you know, they're hand assembled elsewhere, I think in China.
Yeah.
And so sometimes there's a fleck of paint from where they were dotting an eye, and the brush put a dot somewhere.
I mean, there's going to be defects.
There's going to be defects, but like, I want to make sure it like looks perfect in the box.
Yeah.
I
mean, any sort of collector of like a statue or figurine would want that. Like,
yeah.
You know, you don't want your person looking weird.
Yeah, exactly.
Nice.
So, yeah, no, it was an interesting documentary. I highly recommend it. It's interesting to find out more about a company that I didn't really think that I would have any interest in, but by the end of it, I was just like, that's cool. And also, since Toys R Us closed recently, like, we were walking through one before the last one closed.
Oh, nice.
And, the last
Funkos?
One in the U.S. They had a lot of Funkos. That's where I got my Battle Armor Skeletor. favorite, like, Marvel movie, I think, right now is Doctor Strange. And so they had this two Strange figure, like, action figure set where it's, like, it's the super detailed figures. And so one of them is, like, Doctor Strange, like, as he is in the movie. And then there's a little, like, mandala type thing. And then another one is his figure reversed in whatever pose he's having in the box.
Yeah.
But he's this, like, glow-in-the-dark version that's this astral version, which
that's
actually
cool.
Really cool. And it was, like, 80% off.
Did you guys snag it?
Yeah, no, she got it.
Nice.
I think we walked out of there with, like, easily $30-$40 worth of. She also got a thing that we want to do at Halloween that's like one of those like baking things you get for kids, but it's all spooky themed. It's Dr. Zombie's head goo or whatever.
God. Is it all gummy stuff?
Yeah, it's like gelatiny gummy, like
that
food coloring stuff.
One thing I hate is gummy stuff. I cannot eat any sort of like gummy bears, gummy worms.
I mean, there may be potions and stuff that you can make candy out of, but, like point is, like, we walked out of there with probably $40, $50 worth of stuff, and I think we paid, like, $12.
Nice.
Like, it's, yeah.
Yeah.
I hate
Unfortunate.
To say that, but, like, I wanted to do it.
You go and get the deals while the deals were hot.
Yeah.
It was unfortunate that they went out of business, but.
Yeah, because I had so many good memories of them as a kid. But, yeah, Making Fun, The Story of Funko, it's on Netflix. Enjoy it while it's still there.
Nice. And on the whole documentary thing, I also went and saw a movie. It was Will You Be My Neighbor?
Oh, okay.
It was a documentary about Mr. Rogers.
Yeah, how is that?
It is good. It is really good. So, I didn't watch the original show, but I definitely caught it as a younger kid on reruns and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But, you know, I was a young kid, so I don't think I was able to comprehend everything.
Yeah.
Just learning about his background, like, I didn't know much about Mr. Rogers. Like, I didn't know where he had come from, what he did.
He had, like, a graduate degree in children's education, right?
So he went and got his, I believe it was ministry.
Okay.
It was because he ended up being a minister, but his main focus was with children, okay. talking with kids. And his big thing was he wanted to talk to kids like actual adults. So on the first run, like the first season of his show, they actually talked about one of, I believe it was a candidate or somebody, but there was an attempted assassination. So on their first season, they talked about assassinations.
Wow.
Yeah, the little kids.
I didn't know that. That is insane.
It was really interesting, like some of the just stories that they breached and talked about. And he was also a big advocate about people, everybody's the same.
Yeah.
So there were a lot of, like, you know, his show went during the tensions, you know, the Jim Crow stuff and the race tensions.
I've seen footage in one of the CNN documentaries, I think for the 70s maybe, where it's footage of him wanting to tackle that, like, head on.
Yeah.
And so, like, there's a scene from a show where, like, he's, like, chilling out at his pool in the backyard, and he's, like, washing his
cooling down. He's washing his feet, yes.
With his postman?
Yes, his postman.
Who's a African-American mm-hmm. postman.
And he invites him to, you know, sit in the pool with him to wash his feet, and he starts washing his feet.
Yeah.
And that aired after there was an incident where some people went into the whites-only pool in this hotel, and the hotel owner got bleach and started pouring bleach into the...
What the fuck?
Yeah, trying to get those people
Jesus.
Out.
Jesus.
Because they were protesting. They were like, you don't need to separate, you know, pools.
Yeah, pools.
Yeah. So they wouldn't get out, so he got bleach and started dumping it into the
Jesus.
Pool. Yeah, which is insane to think about.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so he tackled that. The neighborhood cop was African-American, too. And people were, like, going crazy about that. Like, an African-American cop, that's insane.
Yeah.
And the man was such a wholesome person. And a lot of people were like, oh, did he go to war or something like that? No, he never did that. And he had a strong belief system. But he also, you know, believed that people were people. He didn't think that gays were going to hell. He was openly supportive of gay people's rights. And it was just, it was interesting. And again, there was some comedic parts to the documentary as well. Because his show ended, or basically was running during like the 70s and 80s.
Yeah.
So like the crew were always these like, interesting folks because they were, you know, they were theater folks and stuff like that. And they would always have fun with him and he was laughing and enjoying it. Some guy like took his camera and took a picture of his butt. And
well, did they explain, because there's a photo, I want to say it's an actual photo, it's not been doctored or anything, but it's a photo of Fred Rogers giving the finger.
Yeah.
Did they go into that at all? Like, was
no,
that
they
just
didn't.
A candid,
I
like,
think it was just
crew
him
shot?
Being on, yeah.
Like, he was
on,
just, okay.
Because he would relax and have fun with his crew, and he was, they said that the man was so down to earth. But again, he did a lot of stuff with puppetry, too.
Yeah.
And, it was interesting. A big thing was, so, as kids' shows came out, they had to be, like, faster and grab kids' attention, and it would be a lot of lights and, like, quick things.
Yeah.
And they did a segment where Mr. Rogers wanted to be like, all right, we're going to sit for a minute. And he put an egg timer on. And that's all he did was just sit for a minute. He didn't say anything. He just looked at his egg timer, crossed his legs, and was like,
wow.
Now you know how long a minute is. Like, his show was very slow paced.
That is awesome.
But it taught so many people so many different things.
Yeah.
And the thing was, like, he wouldn't go into imagination world because he wanted to make sure that they were separate. Yeah. Like, there was his world where he had his house and he fed his fish. And then there was imagination world where they could tackle things.
Yeah.
Where that was sort of when, like, people started talking a bit about, like, the assassination and things along those lines, which were hard subjects to talk to kids, but they did it. They wanted to talk to them and let them know what happened. Because they also had a show about when the shuttle exploded.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they also had that subject, and they talked about it. And they talked about it like adults, but to a child, yeah, so they could understand.
Right.
And it was an amazing documentary. I went with one of my friends, with one of my guy friends, and I was almost, like, tearing. Well, I was crying. I was like, oh, no. But, like, it's so emotional because the guy, and then they talk to his family, and his son was saying, like, it was really hard because, like, your dad is basically the second coming. Like, people treated him like the second coming, and, like, you how do you interact with Mr. Rogers as your dad?
Exactly.
Because he was saying, like, when he got his stern voice on, you knew something was bad because, you know, he was a really outgoing guy. And it was really nice.
Well, I'm glad to hear that he's not, like...
Yeah.
He seems like a genuinely decent person.
And he wasn't a genuine guy,
It wasn't, like, a secret of who's just, like... Yeah, my dad used to put oranges in a sock and beat me every Christmas Eve.
No, this man...
Like, he's a good person.
Yeah, and
like,
he worked with children. He had a lot of... there was a child who was disabled, and he was going through a lot of surgery. And the Make-A-Wish Foundation asked if the child could be on his show. And he was like, yeah. And they're like... So his parents brought him on. And his parents asked him, like, okay, so what's going to happen? And Mr. Rogers was like, oh, we're just going to sing some songs. I'm going to talk to your son. And it'll be fun. Like, that's all he wanted to do was, like...
Make sure this kid had a good day.
Yeah, that there wasn't, like, a schedule or a plan of, like, this is what we're going to talk about.
Yeah.
He was just going to talk to them like a normal human being. They're going to sing some of their favorite songs together. And that was it. It touched me. It really, like... It's great to see, like, this wonderful thing, or this wonderful person, and this great show on TV. And I know if I ever have kids, I'm definitely going to, like, put some of that on for, like, reruns. And it's just amazing, like, what you can teach children when you don't, like, dumb it down or make it slapsticky or anything along those lines.
Yeah.
One other thing that kind of really touched me was... So we went in, we were at the theater, and these two older ladies came in and sat down near us, and one actually dropped her coin purse, and she was, like, trying to pick up her coins off of the movie floor, and it was dark. So I ended up getting up with my flashlight on my phone and helped her pick up the coins, and she looked at me, and she was like, oh, you would have made Mr. Rogers really proud. I was like... Thank you. Like, you know, it's like, you do nice things to people, and, like, I wasn't looking for, like, a reward or a thank you or something like that. I wanted to help her out because she looked like she was struggling. She was an older lady. It was dark. And it just, you know, do some nice things. It'll make you feel really good.
Yeah, everyone's just trying to get along in this space rock.
And then again, just, like, be kind to people, like, and people will be kind to you, and if somebody helps you out, feel free to, like, telling them thanks goes a long way. Like, that made my day, just her saying thank you, and I'm sure it made her day, me helping her out. Yeah. And we both made each other's day better. Yeah. So that was my feel good. I highly recommend that movie. The movie was great. I learned so much, and it's just a real feel-good movie. it'll definitely make you cry at some points. And, yeah, it put a big smile on my face. And I love that, so.
Well, cool. Yeah, no, it's one that I've been wanting to check out. I just, with work and
yeah, whatever. I saw it over at the Terra.
Okay, yeah, that doesn't surprise me.
Yeah.
Well, from your feel good, we'll move into my feel bad.
Oh, no.
So I watched this movie called The Gambler.
Never heard of it.
So it's a... I watched the remake. Normally, I do not like Mark Wahlberg.
Mm-hmm.
But I remember having seen the original this is based on with James Caan. It's one of his early movies. Like, it's I want to say it's from, like, the 70s, maybe?
Yeah.
But they remade it. And Mark Wahlberg is playing the same character. It's got John Goodman in it.
Mm-hmm.
It's the story of a English professor at a college who is a gambler.
Yeah.
He's a gambling addict.
Oh.
His family's well-to-do. They say at one point in the movie, like, the movie opens with him sitting next to his grandfather on his deathbed, and his grandfather goes, you know, I've taken you out of the will because the measure of a man is what he can what he can do on his own, right?
Yeah.
And it's revealed later in the movie that his grandfather owns, like, half of Southern California. Like, this is an insanely wealthy family.
Yeah.
He's just, like, has none of it.
Oh.
Like, he's a successful novelist, and he's a professor at a California university.
Mm-hmm.
But he gets into gambling debts with, I think I'm pretty sure they're Korean.
Yeah.
For, like, multiple hundreds of thousands of dollars.
That's a lot of money.
Then he gets involved in the same night that he gets further and further in debt with the Korean gang, who... Yeah. It's bad when the gangsters who are running the casino pull you aside and go, stop.
Yeah, because they're making money off of you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They, like, but... well, and the Korean, like, the criminal leader goes, like, because Mark Wahlberg's character makes that point of, like, well, look, I'll pay you back. And he's like, there's a point when your debt is too high that you can't pay it back.
We know there's no possibility of paying it back, so...
Yeah, like, they have...
Just
they,
stop.
You know, like, in Vegas, they send a pit boss over to you if you're winning too much? Like, there's a scene where he starts winning lots and lots of money, and they send the equivalent of a pit boss over to watch him.
Mm-hmm.
And the guy is there, like, it as the gambling occurs and he starts winning more and more and more money... The guy isn't there to make sure he's cheating. The guy is there to make sure he doesn't make dumb bets so he doesn't get his ass into, like, okay, it's time to kill this guy.
Yeah.
Like, there's just no winning with him.
There's no recouping our losses, so...
He gets involved with a criminal who stakes him in a game. He loses to him, and then he bets the guy separately after having insulted him.
Oh.
And then the guy takes him up on it, and he's a rough and tumble guy who is not like the Koreans, and he says straight up, give me my money in 3 days or I'm going to fucking kill you.
No.
It's a really dark movie.
Yeah.
It's really good. John Goodman does a fantastic job in this movie.
Oh, he's in it.
Third criminal.
Jeez.
That he borrows money from. Yeah, well, like, it's underground gambling.
Yeah.
And so he's just kind
of... not want to get into underground gambling.
No, like, he's just moving through this world and, like, borrowing money and purposely losing it from one guy to another. Like,
yeah.
his whole...
You borrow money from Paul to pay back Sam.
Well, no, like, he's purposely raising his money, like, to a point that he cannot pay it back.
Nah.
Because he, I would think, is kind of suicidal. He, like... you know, wears all black and he's moody and, like, his whole thing in his classes that he teaches are that, you know, life is a meaningless series of repetitions and things like that.
What does he teach?
English.
English.
Yeah.
Okay.
I recommend it. It's a It's really well paced. No, like, it's a good movie, yeah. And it doesn't end how you think it would end.
Okay. You saw on Netflix, or?
No, I just rented it from the library.
Oh, okay. Called The Gambler?
Yeah, The Gambler.
Nice.
I don't know how it did money-wise. I can't imagine it did very well, because it's a darker R-rated movie.
Yeah.
Even though it's got Mark Wahlberg and John Goodman in it.
I mean, those are some big names.
They are, but, like, I think the only trailer they put out was this Red Band trailer where John Goodman is explaining to him at one point in the movie why he won't stake him in a game and why it's important to have what he calls fuck you money. And then he goes through this monologue listing situations where you say fuck you and leave, or fuck you, pay me.
Yeah. I mean, you've got to have limits. Definitely need limits.
But yeah, like, it's the Red Band trailer is John Goodman saying fuck you, pay me, like, five or six times, and then giving circumstances. It's a cool trailer, but Red Band trailers only play before R-rated movies.
Yeah.
It's R-rated movies have a limited audience anyway, unfortunately. This is definitely a more adult cerebral movie.
Okay.
But it's definitely worth the, like, hour and a half runtime.
Nice.
Yeah.
Well, going from gambling to gambling, I actually went to Vegas for a bit.
Now, why did you go? Was this business or was this party?
It was mainly just party. Gotcha. One of my friends, his mother was getting married in Vegas. It was her third wedding, so she decided that she wanted to get married by Elvis. She was a big Elvis fan, so she wanted an Elvis wedding, and the best Elvis wedding is in Vegas. So he went and, you know, supported her, was part of the whole wedding ceremony. And he asked if me and another one of my friends wanted to join them up there for a little bit. So we did. I was there for 4 days. 4 days is probably... I would probably do 3 days. It's kind of long. Because Vegas has certain things to offer. And once you're tired of that, you're kind of tired of it. I stayed over at Treasure Island. One of the great things was they had a big pool, and there was always a lot of people at that pool. Like, it was definitely rave style.
Yeah.
Like, a bunch of people just dancing around, which was nice. I mean, going down there and you, like, talk to people because everybody's from somewhere different. You talk to folks and you, like, you know, meet up and just chat with them a while and then leave. Because everything's so transient there. Like, if you meet one person, you'll probably never see that person again.
Yeah.
But I definitely went there with limits. Like, I knew I was going to only spend this much money.
Yeah.
God, I lost it all. Everything.
Did you lose it all the first night?
No, not the first night. It was a series of bad, I guess, bets or just being unlucky. Because I'm fairly, I would say, lucky.
Yeah.
Especially when we're playing, like, role-playing games and things like that. When I need to roll some, like, high numbers, I usually roll the high numbers.
I've seen you call rolling a 20.
Yeah.
On one of my dice that I know was not doctored.
Yeah. So, I thought, you know, I would have fairly good, decent luck. I know most of the games, or not most, all the games are in favor of the house.
Yeah, isn't it like an 11% advantage that the house has?
It depends on what game you
like
play.
Like, on a longer time frame, the house always wins.
The house always wins. But yeah. So, I did a sports bet, a parlay, and I never say this. I don't know why I said this, but I got it. And I was like, yeah, I'm feeling really good on this, like, sports bet. No. So, I was like, money in the bank. I lost it all. I was like, all right, so I'm going to play some roulette. And so, I had a system where you play either black or white, or black or red.
I mean, you can play exact
you can
numbers.
Play exact numbers if you want.
What's the payout for black versus for black or red?
50. So if you put in $10,
you get 500.
No, not 50. 50%.
Oh, okay. No. Gotcha. So you get 50-50 back if you.
No, so if you put in $10 and it hits red, you get $10.
Okay.
You get
gotcha.
$10 plus whatever
plus
you
whatever
bet.
Yeah.
So the theory is you bet $10. Let's say you lose that $10. Well, then you put $20 on red again. And if you hit it, you made back that $10
well,
that you lost.
You recoup your loss.
Yes. So you double your money every time you lose. And it's not a coin flip because you have the two greens, but I think it's like a 46% chance
okay.
that you're going to hit it. So I went to the roulette table. I was like, all right, $10 on red, lost it. All right, $20 on red, lost it. Like, okay. $40 on red. Lost it. I was like, okay. $80 on red. and guess what?
Lost it.
So I'm sitting there. I'm like, okay. So my next bet is going to be 160. Do I want to put 160 on red and lose that?
Or do you put it on black?
No. You don't want to because then it'll hit red and you've fucked yourself up. So, and I had already lost 10, 20, 40, and 80. So that's $150 right there. $150. Yeah. Because, no, is that $150? I'm doing
10,
math quick.
20,
that's,
40, and 80?
Yeah, that's $150. Yeah. I did quick math. I'm smart. Math smart. So I lost $150, and I lost it in a time period of about 3 minutes.
Wow.
So I didn't
so
even
what
get...
was your upper limit for spending the entire weekend?
My upper limit. Gosh. So my
what
upper...
were you willing to lose the entire...
So I brought $500.
Okay.
$500. So I lost $150 there.
So you
so
were
my
about
next bet...
to lose $310 of your $500. Okay.
Yeah. So I said, I can't put this money down. So I walk away from the table. I say, thank you. And then as I'm leaving, I decide, I'm just going to see. Because they actually have a machine. They have a screen that tells you what numbers have hit in like
the last
10.
Like 10 spins. Yeah.
So I was like, oh, I wonder what one number hit. So I went back. I was like, I should check. So I went back, double zeros. Green. I would have been out $160. So I'm glad I didn't make that bet. But yeah.
So can you bet on green?
Yeah, you can bet on green.
So what's the payout on green? Is it like 33 to 1?
Well, there's only two. There's zero and double zero out of.
Oh, okay. So
it's a
pretty high payout then.
Yeah, it's a high payout.
Yeah. Wow. Okay.
So I lost all my money there. I was like, gosh, crap. So I decided to do some blackjack, and there's
which should favor you since you're good at math.
Yeah.
I mean,
and
how many
accounting system there too that people can look up where you count low numbers minus one, high numbers plus one, and if the and if you're at a negative number, you should bet higher because there's more high cards in the deck.
Doesn't Vegas use like six deck hoppers?
Yeah, usually like 10 deck shoes and stuff like that.
Oh yeah, so, shoes. Yeah.
Yeah, so you don't know. But no, I brought $100 to blackjack, lost it all in about like 20 minutes. I know. And it was like $10 bets. Jesus. And I just my luck was and I don't know.
Because you got cocky.
Because I kept on saying money in the bank. So soon it started becoming Mooney in the bank because I wasn't having any money in the bank. Mm-hmm. And it was funny. A friend of mine was like, you should get that tattoo, like Mooney in the bank, and have like a cow jumping over the Mooney, like a moon. Yeah. I was like, no. We went to the old part of Vegas. We saw like the Golden Nugget area, which was pretty cool. I ate at an In-N-Out burger. They had some nice burgers there.
I don't like In-N-Out.
Really?
I've never liked In-N-Out.
Yeah.
I know they're a West Coast thing.
I enjoyed it. I thought it was good food. And I talked to people. I went to the pool a lot because after like the third day, I was pretty much done. I don't want to bet anymore because I just kept on losing everything. Yeah. So I spent a lot of time at the pool and just like talking with people and stuff like that. Once you kind of run out of money, there's not too much stuff to do. I ended up like sitting in the apartment watching some Netflix.
That's funny. It's funny. My dad.
Sorry. Your dad.
Oh yeah, like my dad has gone to Vegas numerous times, just for like trade shows and stuff that he has to be at for work. And so if he's been before and he gets to choose where he's staying, he said he always, for whatever reason, he gravitates to the older Vegas side, like the Tropicana and places like that, just because they feel more authentic for some reason than the newer places like the Bellagio and the Mirage and stuff like that.
So two more things.
Okay.
I got a full body massage. It was a deep tissue like therapeutic massage.
Did you feel like you were drunk when you were walking away?
God, it was so good. I've never had a full body massage before. That was like one of the best things. With all the working out that I've been doing and stuff like that. Oh,
probably a lot
God.
Of lactic acid, though.
Yeah. That felt so great. Though, when I first went in there, it was a female who was doing it. And she pointed to her license and she was like, "I'm a licensed therapist."
I bet she has to do that all the time just to be like, this is not...
yeah. This isn't
a place
funny business
where you get the funny business at the end, okay?
I was like, you know, okay, I wasn't expecting anything. I just want a regular
tissue.
Yeah, because my body hurts. And then I saw a show there.
What show?
It was called Opus. It was a show, it was a variety show where they did like different acts and stuff.
Oh, okay.
But it had like a main structure where they were kind of poking fun at, like, Star Trek and Star Wars. It was a space sort of theme.
Cool.
It was really interesting. One girl was dressed up from, like, Leelu from Fifth
Futurama.
Element.
Oh, no, that's Leela.
Leela,
yeah, Leelu is for Fifth Element.
Yeah.
Leela is from Futurama.
Yeah.
I misunderstood what you were saying. Oh, she was from Leelu,
yeah.
From Fifth Element?
Yes.
Gotcha.
Yeah. With the little stripe things.
Yeah.
It was really funny. They brought in a lot of, like, participation from the audience, which was cool. They had some really strange acts, and then they had some really cool acts. So.
Okay.
So, yeah. So, all in all, it was a good Vegas experience. Well, no. I lost a lot of money. but I would still do Vegas again because it's always interesting. You never know what your luck is going to be.
Yeah, I've always wanted to go. Like, I don't know if... Maybe it's just the day of traveling that we had, but when we last summer went to see a bunch of bands play in Texas, we stopped for the night in Shreveport, and Louisiana is one of the other places where you can gamble for, like, lower stakes. Like,
yeah.
Not like, $1,000 hands and stuff. Like, this is a place that's it's mainly slot machines, and then there's a few craps tables, right? So we go in and lose like $10 in the span of like three pulls because none of the machines really explain how they work.
Yeah.
And so we were like, well, this was fun. And then we left and the guy who had to check our IDs going in was just like, you weren't here very long. It's like, you know, we lost the $10 we were willing to spend because like I said, my dad went to Vegas a lot, growing up for like trade shows and stuff. Mm-hmm. And he said that whenever, like, he never came home with less money than he went with. And what he would do is every night he would like go down and put the money that he was willing to lose in his right pocket.
Yeah.
And any winnings in his left pocket. And he never like switched pockets. And when the right pocket was empty, went to bed.
Yeah.
Just went back up to the hotel.
But that's the thing is like, you could start off losing and then,
you know, you can justify yourself of, well, I'll win it back.
Yeah.
And
then if you don't, then you're just out of money.
Yeah.
So that was that. you know, it was enjoyable. I did really enjoy the show. I did really enjoy, like, going around and just looking at the cool artwork that they had. I went to Caesars. They had a lot of cool, like, structure and paintings and things like that. So that was a lot of fun. But yeah, that was it
for me. Did the real Caesar live there?
No, but they had this, like, water show of, like, how Atlantis fell into the sea. Okay. Where it's like this, I guess, like animatronics shooting fire and water and stuff. It was kind of cheesy, but it was cheesy in like the Vegas cheesy way. Yeah.
And for the listening audience, I know that this real Caesar did not live, or Caesars did not live in Caesar's Palace in Las Vegas. That was a reference to The Hangover.
Yeah. Oh, ate a lot of great foods. We went to a lot of good restaurants.
Food is really cheap in Vegas, too, right?
It's normal.
Depending. Yeah.
I went to this buffet. Man, that buffet was great. But yeah, so that's it for me.
Okay. Yeah, I had a coworker who went once for like a bachelor party for a friend of his from college. And he came back. He won like $15,000.
Jeez.
Over the course of the weekend that he was there. He won enough that he had to fill out tax paperwork before he left.
I wish that could have been me.
And he said that it's really sneaky what they do, because he, you know, that's not, for them, that's not a whole lot of money, but that's still a lot of money for someone to walk away with.
Yeah.
Is like the hotel started like comping them things to like make them stay longer, and then he was just like,
so they could win their money back.
Well, yeah, and they offered him a couple extra days, nights stay there if he just stayed a little bit longer, and he was just like, I gotta go back to work.
Yeah,
like,
I mean,
like I'm just gonna take this tax. I'm gonna take these tax forms and file them away and take my money.
Yeah,
and we'll go from there. So yeah, with. You have a good time?
Yeah.
Other than losing money?
Yeah, I mean, other than betting and gambling, I had a good time there. And again, you know, your luck always goes up and down. I will probably go back in the future and maybe I'll win.
Just don't say Money in the Bank this time.
Or Mooney in the Bank.
Or Mooney in the Bank.
God, yeah. Those words cursed me.
So the other movie that I saw that I'll talk about is... The Canyons.
Cool.
No one's ever heard of this movie.
I've never heard of it.
So, the reason I picked it up is that I love Bret Easton Ellis. He's the guy that wrote Less Than Zero, American Psycho is the big one.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I know American Psycho. But
he does well writing about disaffected youths who have nothing to be disaffected about.
No. Yeah.
I just like the way his work reads.
Nice.
So he wrote this movie, and it was directed by the guy who wrote Taxi Driver in the 70s. So I kind of had high expectations going into this. The low part is that Lindsay Lohan is one of the actors. This is post like drug during drug problems. Lindsay Lohan.
Okay.
And the male lead is porn star James Dean.
Oh. Okay.
So it's kind of, well, like I think it's like he was like trying to break into like mainstream acting. Super low budget. Like it looks like they may have shot it in Bret Easton Ellis's house, because like the story is that the male lead is a successful movie producer.
Yeah.
And he's young, you know, like he's in his late 20s, maybe early 30s. Lindsay Lohan, even though she's supposed to look the same age because of all her drug stuff and all the like,
yeah, kind of
the plastic surgery, like she looks like she's in her 40s.
Yeah, which is unfortunate for her.
So they don't look at all the same age. They don't seem like they would be in a relationship, but they're in this relationship. There's a bunch of homoerotic undertones to it. It's kind of got some, like, murder mystery elements to it. It's a very bizarre movie.
Yeah, it seems like you're kind of reserved on it, like...
It's... I mean, I would recommend a watch if you like Brett Easton Ellis, because it's the type of, like, the voice... His voice is there in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think he knows how to write a screenplay.
Yeah.
I
mean, I can't think of anything that I've seen of his.
Yeah, I mean, he, like, his books are very well put together. Like, he was very successful very early in his career. He wrote Less Than Zero, which was his first book, as a creative writing project in college, and it was being made into a movie the next year. So his, like, junior year of college, he was responsible for, like, a multi-million-dollar movie.
Yeah.
So, like, he's a very good writer, which is why I wanted to watch it. And I love Paul Schrader's work with the Taxi Driver.
Yeah.
It's just, it's very bizarre. Like, you have to be in the right headspace for it. It's very much like one of the, it feels like a late 70s, early 80s, like, drama film.
Yeah.
About successful young people and the hijinks they get up to.
It was crazy hijinks.
So yeah, I would recommend it with a caveat.
Yeah. I could sort of see it. I mean, the way that you described it, I'm not.
You're probably not going to watch it. Yeah.
Unfortunate.
Yeah, and I mean,
just not my style.
Well, so the movie came out a few years ago. I picked it up on DVD Do you know the store Ollie's? They're like a discount store. One of them popped up near where we are. And
I don't go to discount stores. I pay full price.
Yeah.
Because I'm a baller.
You don't do laundry either. You just wear new clothes all the time.
I do not do either of those things.
Ollie's has these movies, and they're usually cheapo movies. I think I paid like 70 cents for this brand new.
Yeah.
Like, it's just an average short store. So... Yeah, I recommend it for a view, but, like, I'm not keeping this movie.
Yeah. A view for 70 cents? 77 cents?
Yeah, for 70 cents, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, that was my third movie. Did you have anything else to talk about, or should I stay talking about books?
No, I mean, no.
No?
I mean, Vegas was pretty much most of my...
Your thing? Yeah. Okay, gotcha. Well...
It was all Vegas all the time.
Well, so I read... God. I read a couple Star Wars books.
Oh.
Because they're not very long.
Yeah, Star Wars.
Star Wars.
We love this topic.
So, one of them I really recommend, but especially if you like short stories.
Okay.
It's called From a Certain Point of View, and it was put out last year for the 40th anniversary of A New Hope.
Okay, so it's still part of the actual...
Yeah, and so universe. It is canon, because it's put out by Del Rey, which is now the official canon source for Disney's Star Wars ownership.
Yeah.
And so these short stories are all written from the character in the scene's point of view from the start of Star Wars to the very end. So, like, it starts off...
When you say the start of Star Wars, do you mean...
A New Hope.
Oh, okay. So you're not going to the prequels.
No, it's the 40th anniversary of A New Hope, and this was put together. There's 40 short stories in it.
Okay.
The first one, it opens up with the captain of Leia's transport.
Okay. That gets captured.
One of the funnier ones is... it's a story written from... Admiral Mahdi's point of view, which he's the guy that Vader force chose.
Yeah.
And it's written in the form of a report to a supervisor, where he's telling on Vader. And so he's like outlining, he's just like, I understand that everyone has their religious practices, but I feel that he was like, I feel like I was voicing some real concerns, and then Lord Vader attacked me and thrust his religious views into the argument, and I don't feel like this is a safe work environment. It's really funny.
I would like to borrow this book from you.
I got it from the library. I get a lot of things from the library.
I'll still find the book, nonetheless. Yeah, that does sound hilarious.
Yeah, no, it's super funny. The stories, and they range in tone.
There's some serious ones versus...
Yeah, there's a scene where... It's during the point when Luke is racing home because he realizes the stormtroopers are going to
his
aunt and uncle's. And so the story is, it's not all first person. It's third person, but it's, I think all of them are first person. Now that I think about it, I wasn't paying attention while I was reading it to that level, but, I want to say it's from, the point of view of Qui-Gon Jinn. Because Obi-Wan Kenobi on Tatooine, Yoda shows him how to communicate with the dead. And so Qui-Gon is interacting with Obi-Wan because Obi-Wan is like, look, I want to wash my hands of this. I don't want to do this anymore. I'm done. I'm tired of this. And Qui-Gon, because he's part of the Force, the implication is that he can see... He knows that Obi-Wan is going to die.
Yeah.
And he knows how he's going to die. And so he's, you know, telling him what he should do.
Yeah.
And you know, it's really well put together.
Cool.
It's really good as a set of short stories.
What's it called again?
From a Certain Point of View.
From a Certain Point of View. Okay, yeah. I'll be definitely interested to check that
out. Yeah, and it's not very long. I mean, 40 sounds like a lot. There's one, I think the longest story is maybe 15 pages. A lot of them are just a handful of pages.
Yeah, nice.
So it moves really quickly.
Yeah.
The other Star Wars that I read was a book from James Luceno called Catalyst, a Rogue One story. And it's a prequel to Rogue One.
Yeah.
Which... it's really interesting because it fleshes out Galen Erso's story and his connection with Krennic more. Mm-hmm. The thing with Star Wars pre-Disney and post-Disney, I have mixed feelings with how they approach the medium.
Mm-hmm.
Lucasfilm, pre-Disney... honestly, my suspicion is that George Lucas was not putting out movies because he didn't need to, one, and two, he was running out the contract that they had with Kenner, so he could negotiate a bigger percentage.
Yeah. But, I mean, he did have a vision of what he wanted Star Wars to go. Weird, microscopic way of, like...
the Wills.
Yeah.
God. The way that they used
to... look that up, people. Look up the Wills.
The way they used to treat the books is obviously Expanded Universe, which is now Legends, which I totally get why...
understand.
Disney got rid of it. You
gotta
make
a clean slate, so...
yeah. Lucasfilm, I think, had... well, it's still Lucasfilm. Pre-Disney... Lucasfilm had a more freedom in putting out the books as Expanded Universe, and that's why people are so attached to those stories.
Yeah.
Because there weren't very many movies. Now with Disney, one of the things that's frustrating, I think, in terms of consuming the media is
when it's like a movie a year.
Well, no, it's not that. It's that they have a movie a year, and then they put out books that you have to read to get more out of the movie. I understand why they're doing it.
Mm-hmm.
It's frustrating. And I know it sounds like I'm complaining about doing the things that a fan does, but if I'm watching a movie, I shouldn't also have to have read this book to get the full story.
Yeah.
You're either not making a movie well or something. I was also listening, well, while I was reading this, it was funny, I was listening to a podcast where one of the hosts was making a point that there probably wouldn't have been as much fan backlash if Disney had approached it in a different way,
like
writing out the previous book stories. If they, so what she was saying, which I fully agree with,
mm-hmm.
is that if Disney had approached it in the way of not saying, okay, we're going to restart the expanded universe, because that's basically what they did. They said, yeah. All of this stuff that's no longer canon, all these years that you put into this,
all the characters they're worthless, attached to.
Yeah.
Yeah, are basically done.
If they had instead done what Marvel did and called it, you know how Marvel did the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Yeah.
The implication there is that all the other comics that you read up to that point, those are still valid. The cinematic universe is pulling from those. If they had instead called it the Star Wars Cinematic Universe,
yeah.
they can kind of cherry pick and pull from sources. Kind of like what they're, because they're already doing it, they're just not calling it the Star Wars Cinematic Universe.
Yeah.
Which is, I think, the step they need to take, because, and I know this is veered off topic, the catalyst.
I mean, we talk about Star Wars, we veer off topic.
Well, like, the catalyst book is really well done.
Yeah. Would it be something that you would recommend to people? Like,
I would recommend it if you liked Rogue One, but yet still had some questions about what Erso and Krennic's relation is, because it doesn't seem like they ever really got along.
Yeah.
Galen Erso, he is presented differently in the book than he is in the movie. Like, in the movie, it looks like it was his plan all along.
Yeah.
The book makes it clear that he's so focused on his scientific study of this one particular thing.
Yeah.
That he is willing to overlook everything attached to it as long as he can do his research. And so the way it colors the movie is that in the movie, like, by the time they're constructing the Death Star, he's finally zoomed out and sees the bigger picture and goes, well, fuck.
Yeah. I should have taken
the macro view and I took the micro view.
Yeah.
So it is very well written. I do recommend reading it, especially if you liked Rogue One. Nice. I really like Rogue One.
Yeah.
I don't care what the haters say.
Yeah, I mean,
I appreciate it.
Probably look into it. I'm more thrilled for the other book that you
talked from a certain point of view.
Yeah, I think that's definitely up my alley. But, you know, I was all right with Rogue One, so I might take a look at it.
Yeah, it definitely dives more into, like, the fledgling Imperial side of, like, they haven't really got their shit together a whole lot. Like, they're still trying to carve out what's going on.
Yeah.
Which I always like, because, like, you know, the movies just portray it as the Empire having sprung from nothing, and it's just this big monolith all at once. But, like, the reality is, they don't get there all at once. Like, there's 30 years between...
Taking steps
and doing things. Yeah. And, I guess at the end of it all, I guess that what I'm saying is that Disney should have approached it more like Marvel in terms of branding, rather than basically telling fans that all of their time invested in learning about this thing were moot because they don't count anymore, and suck it up.
And I can see that. I can see that approach. I think that would be a decent approach.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, no, I recommend both those books from a certain point of view.
Sweet.
Really good. It's way better than Rogue One, and it has much broader appeal.
I think it's because it's so
focused on one movie.
Mm-hmm.
And you can kind of, the way they have them, the story structured, it's like if you were watching the movie up to the scenes, like, you could pause the movie, read the story, and go, that's what that character's doing. Okay. Yeah. All right. So it was double exposure, almost. Like, because I was reading this book, and in my head I was plotting out the movie, and like, okay, I know where we are now. That's cool.
I get where we are. Yeah. Nice.
So, yeah, that was me.
Yeah, another one in the bag.
Oh, yeah. So, shoot us an email.
Let us know some of what you enjoy doing.
Yeah. Show up on our Facebook. It's Back Row Super Show.
Yeah, we've got a community there. We just wrapped up.
Did a bracket where we pitted intellectual properties against each other.
Yeah, and that went so well that we're thinking about doing it again next year.
Yeah. I've already kicked around some ideas and submit some ideas if we haven't already included them in the bracket. We may expand the bracket from 16 to 32 because it's just one more tier.
Yeah, I think that should be fine.
Shoot us an email at backrowsupershow@gmail.com. Subscribe on Apple Podcasts or our website.
Yep.
I'm pretty sure we will have been to Dragon Con by the time this drops.
Okay.
So we do plan on doing a convention coverage for Dragon Con.
We will definitely talk about that. Should be a lot of fun.
Highs and lows, go through the schedule, maybe talk about the things we bought.
Yeah. And say if we're dead or not.
Yeah.
I mean you can die at Dragon Con.
You could die. Yeah. You can definitely die trying to do everything.
Yeah. Just be a shell of yourself.
But, thanks for listening, and we'll see you guys next week.
See you next week.
Bye.